Good morning and welcome to Talking Information Center News. My name is Michelle Balcony, and today we are reading from the headlines on Friday, February 20th, 2026. The Democrats look to dismantle not just ICE, but the full Department of Homeland Security. Remarks Wednesday signal that the Democrats would like to dismantle the Department of Homeland Security. Remarks by Representative Ilhan Omar, a Democrat from Minnesota, Wednesday of this week, signal that National Democrats are pursuing sweeping changes that extend far beyond abolishing ICE, as reported by Breitbart. During a town hall, Omar said Democrats are not only discussing eliminating immigration and customs enforcement, but are also engaged in conversations about dismantling the Department of Homeland Security altogether. What I will say is there is an easier conversation happening today than 6-7 years ago when I got into Congress about what we need to do with ICE, which is to abolish it, Omar told attendees in Golden Valley, Minnesota. She then added, "There is a lot of conversation about what the dismantlement of the Department of Homeland Security should look like." Omar's remarks come as Democrats continue to protest federal immigration enforcement operations under President Donald Trump. ICE, which was established in 2003 under DHS, has carried out immigration enforcement actions for more than two decades. Thursday marked the sixth day of a federal shutdown forced by congressional Democrats over their demands to reform ICE. Democrats are pushing for a series of new restrictions on ICE operations, including banning agents from wearing face masks and requiring judicial warrants before making arrests. They are also calling for a mandate that ICE agents wear body cameras, something the Trump administration is already moving toward. In addition, Democrats are seeking to prohibit immigration enforcement actions at what they describe as sensitive locations, including hospitals, schools, and polling sites, a proposal Republicans have flagged, noting that non-citizens are prohibited from voting in U.S. elections under federal law. In recent weeks, several Democrat leaders have strongly condemned ICE operations. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, a Democrat who lost the 2024 election to Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance, has warned that federal enforcement efforts could expand nationwide. To Americans who are watching this, if you are in Portland or LA or Chicago or wherever, they are coming next, Walz said. Republicans have argued that ICE's enforcement actions are lawful operations carried out by federal authorities tasked with upholding immigration law. Critics of Democrat proposals say dismantling ICE or DHS more broadly would significantly reshape national security of the homeland. DHS oversees 22 agencies focused on national security and public safety. Major components include Customs and Border Protection, CBP, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, the Transportation Security Administration, TSA, FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Administration, the U.S. Coast Guard, Secret Service, and U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, USCIS. Lawmakers vote to rename a Florida airport after President Trump. Lawmakers in Florida approved legislation Thursday, renaming the Palm Beach International Airport after President Donald Trump. The 25-11 vote in Florida's Senate came days after the state's House of Representatives passed the measure 81-30. Republican lawmakers largely supported the bill, while Democrats objected to the airport rebrand. It is not misguided and unfair that the Republican-controlled Florida legislature ignored the voices of Palm Beach County by pushing forward a bill to rename Palm Beach International Airport without giving county residents a real opportunity for input, said Representative Lois Frankel, the Democrat who represents West Palm Beach. The bill heads next to Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, also a Republican, who has not said whether or not he will sign it. The governor's office did not immediately return comment. The White House declined to comment also. A spokesperson for Palm Beach County and the Trump Organization did not immediately respond to requests for comment either. The decision to rename the airport after President Trump follows Florida's approval last year of a plan to donate a downtown Miami property for the site of Trump's presidential library. President Trump, a native of New York, moved to Florida in 2019. Before the move, he lived in a penthouse at Trump Tower, but has since taken primary residence at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Palm Beach, as reported by Thomson Reuters. The Trump banner hung over the DOJ, Department of Justice headquarters. A large blue banner featuring President Donald Trump's face was hung on the exterior of Justice Department headquarters this Thursday. The banner hung between two columns on one corner of the building, and it says, "Make America Safe Again," a spin on President Trump's vow to make America great again. In a statement, the Justice Department said it is proud to celebrate 250 years of our great country and our historic work to make America safe again at President Trump's direction. Former FBI Director James Comey, who was investigated and charged by the Justice Department on allegations that he lied to Congress, blasted the display. "Sickening to see this hung on the Department of Justice," Comey wrote in a post on Threads. "But they forgot to cover the inscription on the Pennsylvania Avenue side, where law ends, tyranny begins," he continued. Similar banners have been hung outside other buildings, including the Agriculture Department and Labor Department. Those two banners cost roughly $6,000 and were originally created for Labor Day. Courtney Perella, a spokesperson for the Labor Department, told the New York Times. The Associated Press contributed to this article. The White House eyes a ban on some home investors. President Donald Trump's administration has proposed banning investors with more than 100 single-family homes from purchasing additional homes, the Wall Street Journal reported this week, Thursday, citing a White House memo sent to congressional committee leaders. The proposal, which the Journal said was sent on Thursday, includes various exemptions from the ban, including for investors who build or heavily renovate homes for the sole purpose of renting them out. Trump's administration officials are looking to get the investor ban added to a Senate housing bill currently being negotiated, according to the Journal. The White House did not immediately respond to a request for comment late Thursday. Details of the ban follow an executive order Trump signed in January of this year to restrict large institutional investors from competing with individual home buyers in an effort to make housing more affordable. Under pressure to address voter affordability concerns ahead of congressional elections later this year, the Trump administration has implemented a raft of measures, including purchases of mortgage-backed securities to improve housing and affordability, as reported by Thomson Reuters. President Trump rallies in the state of Georgia and says tariffs prevented a U.S. bankruptcy. President Donald Trump delivered a forceful defense of his America First trade agenda Thursday during a visit to a steel plant in northwest Georgia, declaring that tariffs are fueling a manufacturing revival and protecting U.S. workers from foreign exploration. Speaking at Coosa Steel Corporation in Rome, Georgia, after touring the facility, President Trump raised the company's growth and credited his tariff policies with strengthening domestic industry and restoring jobs that he said had been hollowed out by decades of weak trade deals. According to coverage by The Hill, President Trump told supporters, without tariffs, what would you do? You know what? Everyone would be bankrupt, arguing that protective duties have leveled the playing field for American companies long undercut by foreign competitors. In video of the remarks released by the White House and circulated on social media, President Trump addressed the pending Supreme Court decision that will determine whether the authority he invoked to impose tariffs on national security grounds is lawful. "And I have to wait for this decision," Trump said during his speech in Rome, as shown in footage posted online by his campaign. "I have been waiting forever, forever, and the language is clear that I have the right to do this as president. I have the right to put tariffs on for national security purposes. Countries that have been ripping us off for years. You know what they were doing? They were using tariffs." President Trump told workers gathered on the plant floor that the Constitution and existing trade law give the president broad authority to defend American industry when foreign competitors threaten national security. The Georgia visit marked one of the several economic focus stops the president is making as Republicans gear up for the 2026 midterm elections, with Trump working to bolster GOP candidates and highlight what he calls a turnaround from the economic mess he inherited. On stage with Trump were several Republican congressional candidates, including Clay Fuller, a local prosecutor running to replace former Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene in Georgia's 14th congressional district. Fuller thanked the president for his endorsement and pledged to support the America First agenda, telling the crowd that Georgia needs fighters in Washington who will stand with President Trump and put American workers first, according to remarks carried by local media outlets covering the rally. The president tied his tariff policy directly to affordability, contending that stronger domestic production and fairer trade practices ultimately reduce the cost for American families. "I have to listen to the fake news talk about affordability, affordability," Trump said, according to video of the event aired by regional television stations. "Did you notice that the word you have not heard over the last 2 weeks is affordability? Because I have won. I have won on affordability," Trump continued. "I had to go out and talk about it, but we inherited a mess." Georgia is shaping up to be a major battleground in 26, with the Cook Political Report rating the state's open gubernatorial and Senate races as toss-ups. President Trump singled out Senator John Ossoff, a Democrat from Georgia, who is seeking re-election and is widely viewed by Republicans as one of the most vulnerable Senate Democrats on the ballot next year. "He's a real stiff. We don't want people like that representing Georgia," Trump said, according to multiple media reports covering the rally. In a statement released after the rally, Democratic National Committee Chair Ken Martin criticized Trump's economic record and accused him of failing to lower costs, saying, "Donald Trump promised to lower costs on day one, but Georgians know that was just another one of Trump's broken promises." Martin added that Georgia families are seeing costs rise, healthcare get more expensive, and jobs disappear, while asserting that Democrats would continue pushing policies they say are aimed at lowering costs and protecting healthcare, as reported by Newsmax. President Trump is to order the release of files on UFOs and UAPs. President Donald Trump announced on Truth Social this week he will move to release government files related to aliens, UFOs, and unidentified aerial phenomena known as UAPs. Based on the tremendous interest shown, I will be directing the Secretary of War and other relevant departments and agencies to begin the process of identifying and releasing government files related to alien and extraterrestrial life, unidentified aerial phenomena known as UAPs, and unidentified flying objects, UFOs, as well as any and all other information connected to these highly complex but extremely interesting and important matters, President Trump wrote Thursday of this week. The announcement revives an issue that gained attention during Trump's first term, when the Pentagon formally acknowledged the existence of UAPs, the government's term for unexplained aerial sightings. It also comes days after former President Barack Obama asserted that aliens are real, but I have not seen them. While he gave classified information, he's not supposed to be doing that, President Trump told reporters earlier Thursday, adding, I may get him out of trouble by declassifying. In 2020, the Department of Defense declassified several Navy videos showing unidentified objects performing unusual maneuvers. The Trump administration also established the Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force to assess potential national security threats posed by such incidents. The move marked the first time in decades that the federal government publicly addressed unexplained aerial encounters in a structured way. In 2021, shortly after President Trump left office, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence released a preliminary report on UAPs, examining more than 140 incidents reported by military personnel. The report found no clear evidence of extraterrestrial activity, but acknowledged many cases remained unexplained and could pose flight safety or national security concerns. Since then, bipartisan lawmakers have pushed for greater transparency regarding classified UAP programs, alleged crash retrieval efforts, and government research into unidentified objects, as reported by Newsmax. President Trump says that Obama made a big mistake on revealing the alien information. President Donald Trump Thursday accused former President Barack Obama of improperly revealing classified information while discussing extraterrestrial life, saying the former two-term Democrat made a big mistake. The exchange came after a White House correspondent pressed President Trump aboard Air Force One about Obama's weekend comments on aliens and asked whether the president has seen any evidence of non-human visitors on Earth. Well, he gave classified information that he's not supposed to be doing that, Trump responded. When he asked to elaborate, President Trump doubled down. I don't know if they're real or not, he said. But I can tell you he gave classified information. He's not supposed to be doing that, and he made a big mistake. He took it out of classified information. President Trump added that he does not personally weigh in on the issue. I never talk about it. A lot of people do, the president said, adding, I may get him out of trouble by declassifying. The question arose after Obama was asked about aliens during a Saturday interview on the No Lie podcast. They're real, but I haven't seen them, Obama said, before adding they are not being held at Area 51. There's no underground facility unless there's this enormous conspiracy, and they hid it from the President of the United States, he added. Obama later clarified his remarks in a social media post. I was trying to stick with the spirit of the speed round, but since it's gotten attention, let me clarify. Statistically, the universe is so vast that the odds are good that there's life out there, Obama wrote on Instagram. But the distances between solar systems are so great that the chances we've been visited by aliens is low, and I saw no evidence during my presidency that extraterrestrials have made contact with us, really, he added. As reported by Newsmax. President Trump secures $7 billion for Gaza reconstruction and troops and pledges support. President Donald Trump announced Thursday of this week at the inaugural Board of Peace meeting that 9 members of the body have agreed to pledge $7 billion toward a Gaza relief package, and that 5 countries have agreed to deploy troops to take part in an international stabilization force to the war-battered Palestinian territory. Indonesia, Morocco, Kazakhstan, Kosovo, and Albania have pledged to send troops for Gaza stabilization force, while Egypt and Jordan have committed to train police for the efforts. Troops will initially be deployed to Rafah, a major population center where the U.S. administration hopes to first focus reconstruction efforts. Meanwhile, Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan, the United Arab Emirates, Morocco, Bahrain, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Uzbekistan, and Kuwait are the countries that are making pledges, Trump said. Every dollar spent is an investment in stability and the hope of new and harmonious regions, said Trump in thanking the donors. He added, the Board of Peace is showing how a better future can be built right here in this room. The dollars pledged, while significant, represent a fraction of the estimated $70 billion needed to rebuild the Palestinian territory decimated after 2 years of war. President Trump also announced the U.S. was pledging $10 billion for the Board of Peace, but did not specify what the money will be used for. Major General Jasper Jeffers, the leader of the newly created International Stabilization Force, said the plan calls for 12,000 police and 20,000 soldiers for Gaza. With these first steps, we help bring the security that Gaza needs for a future of prosperity and enduring peace, Jeffers said. The board was initiated as part of President Trump's 20-point peace plan to end the conflict in Gaza. Since the October ceasefire, President Donald Trump has expanded the board's scope to include broader international conflict resolution efforts. Some critics have expressed concern that President Trump's expanded vision for the board could overlap with the role of the United Nations. President Trump, pushing back against the criticism, said the creation of his board would help make the UN viable in the future. Someday I won't be here. The United Nations will be, Trump said. I think it is going to be much stronger, and the Board of Peace is going to almost be looking over the United Nations and making sure that it runs properly. Most countries sent high-level officials, but a few leaders, including Indonesian President Prabowo Subianto, Argentine President Javier Milei, and Hungarian President Viktor Orban, traveled to Washington for the gathering. More than 40 countries and the European Union confirmed they were sending officials to Thursday's meeting. Germany, Italy, Norway, Switzerland, and the United Kingdom are among more than a dozen countries that have not joined the board but are taking part as observers. Almost everyone has accepted, and the ones that haven't will be, Trump predicted. And some are playing a little cute. It doesn't work. You can't play cute with me. The UN Security Council held a high-level meeting Wednesday on the ceasefire deal and Israel's efforts to expand control in the West Bank. The UN session in New York was originally scheduled for Thursday, but was moved up after Trump announced the board's meeting for the same date, and it became clear that it would complicate travel plans for diplomats planning to attend both. Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin told reporters earlier this week that at the international level, it should above all be the UN that manages these crises situations. The Trump administration Wednesday pushed back on the Vatican's concerns. Central to Thursday's discussions was creating an armed international stabilization force to keep security and ensure the disarming of the militant Hamas group, a key demand of Israel and a cornerstone of the ceasefire deal. Hamas has provided little confidence that it is willing to move forward on disarmament. The administration is under no illusions on the challenges regarding demilitarization, but has been encouraged by what mediators have reported back. According to a U.S. official who was not authorized to comment publicly and spoke on condition of anonymity. "We have a long way to go," Secretary of State Marco Rubio said in remarks to the gathering. "There's a lot of work that remains that will require the contribution of every nation state represented here today," as reported by the Associated Press. A report says that DHS weapons spending has surged under President Trump. Senator Adam Schiff, a Democrat from California, Thursday released a report finding that the Department of Homeland Security committed more than $144 million in the first year of President Donald Trump's administration to guns, ammunition, and other weapons for immigration enforcement, which the report described as a sharp increase in weapons-related contracting. The report, which Schiff's office said reviewed federal contracting data from January 20th, 2025 to January 20th, 2026, found Immigration and Customs Enforcement quadrupled in its weapons spending commitments compared with the previous year, while Customs and Border Protection doubled its contracts for weapons purchases. Just in 2025, ICE and CBP have together placed orders to purchase thousands of new high-powered lethal weapons at taxpayer expense, the report said. Among the examples cited was a September 25 order valued at about $9.1 million from Giselle Automatics for precision long guns and accessories for ICE, according to the report, as well as a award description posted on usaspending.gov. The report also cited more than $3.8 million in handgun orders from Glock, Inc., placed by CBP in late 25 and early 26, along with more than $30 million for ammunition and more than $25 million for less lethal weapons and crowd control devices, including tear gas and tasers. The report was released amid heightened scrutiny of immigration enforcement tactics after two fatal shootings of U.S. citizens in Minneapolis in January that drew calls from state and local officials and some members of Congress for a full investigation into the federal operation and use of force. Schiff said in a statement that Americans have watched tragic and fatal consequences from what he called unchecked immigration enforcement and argued that federal government should not spend taxpayer money to further arm immigration agents. "Americans across the country have been witnessing the results of an unchecked immigration enforcement policy that has led to tragic and fatal consequences," Schiff said. This report exposes how DHS has set in motion a massive surge in spending to add even more dangerous weapons to ICE and CBP's arsenal, he added. DHS did not immediately respond to a request for comment Thursday, though the department has said in prior statements that firearms purchases are routine for law enforcement agencies. The contracting figures cited by Schiff come as DHS is preparing to deploy billions of dollars authorized in a sweeping tax and spending law signed by President Donald Trump July 4, 2025, that the administration and outside budget analysts say provides an additional $165 billion for DHS. In announcing the measure signing, DHS Secretary Kristi Noem said the law's DHS funding would support the administration's immigration enforcement priorities, calling it a win for law and order and the safety and security of the American people. CBP and ICE have said their agents face growing risks during enforcement actions, while critics have pushed for tighter oversight, clearer identification of officers, and stronger guardrails on the use of force in operations that sometimes involve heavily armed tactical teams. In addition to long guns and handguns, the report pointed to spending and ammunition and less lethal munitions as evidence that DHS is building capacity for crowd control and higher intensity operations inside U.S. cities as the Trump administration expands interior enforcement, as reported by Newsmax. Huckabee says Carlson's claims of harassment are ridiculous. Tucker Carlson's claims that he and his staff members were harassed by Israeli authorities after he interviewed U.S. Ambassador Mike Huckabee are ridiculous, the ambassador told Newsmax Thursday of this week. Something has surfaced that totally blows this out of the water, Huckabee said on American Agenda. Tucker Carlson is seen on surveillance video in the lounge, and he's hugging and taking photos with the very airport employees that supposedly detained him and harassed him. Carlson told the Daily Mail Wednesday of this week that after he interviewed Huckabee, men who identified themselves as airport security took our passports, hauled our executive producer into a side room, and then demanded to know what we spoke to the ambassador about. It was bizarre, Carlson said. We are now out of the country. But Huckabee, calling Carlson's claims really unfortunate, went on to mock his description of the events. I'll tell you, they roughed him up with all kinds of special snacks. They took his picture. They hugged him, he said. For this ridiculously untrue story about how he was detained, he was not, the ambassador said. Israeli officials and former Prime Minister Naftali Bennett have publicly denied the allegation, with Bennett calling Carlson a chicken. The guy who's been spouting lies about Israel for the past 2 years landed today at Ben Gurion Airport, took a quick picture in the logistics zone, tweeted it to pretend he's actually in Israel so he can later claim that he's a serious reporter who toured Israel, did not even step foot in the country, then made up a story that he's being supposedly harassed by our security, which did not happen, whined about it, got back into the private jet, and flew off, Bennett posted on X. The next time he talks about Israel as if he's some expert, just remember this guy is a phony, he added. Huckabee told Newsmax that normal screening at Israeli airports apply broadly, including to him. They looked at his passport. They looked at everybody's passport, he said. They asked him the standard questions they ask everyone coming in or out of the country. Huckabee added that he always has to show his own diplomatic visa every time he comes or goes from Israel, and they ask me the same questions. The dust-up previewed a hotly anticipated sit-down between two sharply different wings of the Christian MAGA coalition, as their public clashes over Israel mirror a broader rift inside the Republican Party, according to the Jewish News. Carlson, an influential voice on the right, has increasingly echoed anti-Israel themes on his show, which has drawn a growing number of younger right-leaning candidates and online personalities toward his position. Huckabee, by contrast, is a prominent evangelical Christian Zionist who has advocated Israeli sovereignty over the West Bank. Huckabee publicly pressed Carlson for an interview after Carlson criticized him on his podcast over what Carlson called a failure to push back on Israeli demonization of Christians. Carlson ultimately agreed, later posting a photo of himself arriving Wednesday ahead of the interview. Navarro says, winning the affordability battle. White House senior advisor Peter Navarro told Newsmax on Thursday of this week, that President Donald Trump's policies are making things more affordable for Americans, especially housing. Housing cost for Americans is the biggest part of the budget, So if you want to win the affordability battle, that's a good place to start, Navarro said on Rob Schmidt Tonight, and we are winning. He said that rents increased by 1% for every 1 million people who enter the United States illegally. Navarro said that in the 4 years Joe Biden was president, we had 20 million. So rents went up nationally 20% because Joe Biden left that border open. Rent increases were even worse in left-leaning cities such as New York and Chicago. What we're seeing now is we deported thousands upon thousands upon thousands of illegal aliens, and already we're seeing rents go down dramatically in a lot of cities across America, Navarro said. It's a beautiful thing. Things are stabilizing, and it takes a while for that work all around the country, Navarro added. He said that while the Trump administration has made progress in deporting illegal aliens, there is still work left to do. We have not won the fight until we deport the 20 million that came, who are not just driving up rents, but who took our jobs, who depressed our wages, Navarro said. Housing is doing a lot better because of our border security policy, he added. People have to understand that when they support what they're trying to do with deportations. If the Democrats want to fight the 26 midterms on affordability, I say bring it on, Navarro said. Navarro said he expects Americans to remember that Democrats caused inflation and Republicans are better at keeping inflation down. It's not just getting the rate of inflation down, in some cases getting prices down, Navarro said. It's also driving real wages up. And that's happening under Donald Trump, just like it did in the first term, and did not happen with Joe Biden, said Navarro. Wilkie says we need prolonged military action to break Iran. Any U.S. military action against Iran must be sustained and forceful to destroy the regime and create conditions for freedom for the Iranian people, Robert Wilkie told Newsmax this week. These people have been at war with us since 1979, Wilkie told Carl Higbee's Frontline, recounting memories of U.S. soldiers taken hostage during the Iran crisis at the start of the Islamic Republic. It cannot be a one-off. It cannot be a United States Navy show, he continued, stressing that operations must go beyond limited displays of force. Wilkie, former Veterans Affairs Secretary and Undersecretary for Defense in President Donald Trump's first term, called for weeks-long campaigns of the heavy, heavy bombing of the United States Air Force, B-52s, B-2s, B-1s, that will break the ground, destroy the bunkers, and really put an end to one of the most evil regimes in modern history. He then added, if someone tells you over and over again he wants to kill you, believe him, referencing Iranian hostility toward the U.S. and a quote from former Israeli Prime Minister Golda Meir. We've got to make sure this is not just a brief engagement, Wilkie said, asserting that letting Tehran off the hook would have cataclysmic consequences for global peace. Wilkie also tied a confrontation with Iran to broader geopolitical dynamics, noting the implications for the battle spaces in Ukraine and China, and suggesting that eliminating Tehran's influence alongside Russian and Chinese footholds in Venezuela would change the global chessboard. His comments came among and amid a growing U.S. military buildup in the Middle East tied to rising tensions with Iran. In late January, the USS Abraham Lincoln carrier strike group and supporting ships were deployed to the region with additional air, naval, and missile defense forces sent to deter instability and prepare for potential operations against Tehran. The buildup represents one of the largest concentrations of U.S. naval assets near Iran in years. The USS Gerald Ford carrier strike group is soon expected to arrive in the eastern Mediterranean. Wilkie said the aim should be to eliminate the instruments of terror, the ballistic missile facilities, and naval assets near Iran. The USS Gerald Ford carrier strike group is soon expected to arrive in the Middle Eastern Mediterranean. Wilkie said the aim should be to eliminate the instruments of terror, the ballistic missiles facilities, and what's left of their nuclear program, and to give the Iranian people a chance at freedom once Tehran's leadership is defeated. On a related note, Meadows says he's not optimistic about the possibility of the Iran deal. Former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows said Thursday of this week on Newsmax that he is not optimistic that they are going to negotiate a deal with Iran, describing Tehran's long-term aim as literally a nuclear Iran and arguing that the president is not going to let them have it. Meadows appeared on Ed Henry, The Big Take, saying, "Yeah, I'm not going to get in on the betting markets on Iran," when asked about whether Iran will choose peace. Meadows then said his view comes from earlier dealings, adding, "But I will say that having dealt with Iran when I was in Congress, and I'm not optimistic that they are going to negotiate a deal." He described what he said Iran has pursued over time, saying it's literally a nuclear Iran that they've been after for decades. The former North Carolina congressman said the administration would block the outcome, adding, "This president is not going to let them have it." He argued Iran would misjudge the president's willingness to respond, saying, "And quite frankly, they will underestimate this president if they think he is like President Joe Biden or anyone else who preceded him and will take action." His comments followed indirect U.S.-Iran talks in Geneva on Tuesday, and a senior U.S. official said Iran was expected to submit a written proposal afterward. President Donald Trump warned of bad things if no deal is reached and said a deadline was only 10 to 15 days. Iran has told U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres it would respond decisively if subjected to military aggression. Separately, Iran said it temporarily closed the Strait of Hormuz Tuesday of this week for live fire drills as its negotiators held another round of indirect talks with the United States in Geneva. Iranian state media said Iranian forces fired live missiles toward the strait and would close it for several hours for safety and maritime concerns. The strait is a narrow passage between Oman and Iran that connects the Persian Gulf with the Gulf of Oman and the Arabian Sea and is a vital route through which 20% of the world's oil passes. Schlapp on far-left Spanburgers. Record behind rebuttal. Conservative Political Action Conference Chair Matt Schlapp told Newsmax Thursday he believes Virginia Governor Abigail Spanberger is the right pick to give the Democrat rebuttal to the State of the Union address next week. "She represents what the Democrat Party is all about," Schlapp said on the record with Greta Van Susteren. "She is very, very radical. She has a terrible vote score with CPAC." Schlapp, a Virginia resident, said Spanberger likes to present herself as someone who is moderate when she's anything but. "She is all for the woke stuff in Virginia," Schlapp said, noting she's for raising income taxes and having the state's tax burden be on par with California. "No restrictions on abortion, not even parental consent on abortion. It's pretty radical stuff," Schlapp added. "She's saying you can only have magazine clips of a certain number of bullets," Schlapp continued. "She's talking about confiscating people's Second Amendment rights." The CPAC chair said Virginians have never seen a Democrat party this radical. The Democrats today in Virginia are going to turn it into New York City, and you are going to see a powder keg in rural America because they are going to be frustrated by all of this, Schlapp added. In a statement announcing her selection, Spanberger, Virginia's first woman governor, said Americans expect and deserve leaders who are working harder to deliver for them. We are at a defining moment in our nation's history, Spanberger said. Virginians and Americans across the country are contending with rising costs, chaos in their communities, and a real fear of what each day might bring. Senator Alex Padilla, a Democrat of California, will be delivering the Democrat response in Spanish. Holt says, expect action against Iran after the address. Retired Air Force Brigadier General Blaine Holt sketched a window for possible U.S. action against Iran on Thursday's Newsmax and on the record with Greta Van Susteren, saying the details are set and the variable now is timing. Holt said President Donald Trump is stretching the diplomatic runway to see and exhaust every possible opportunity to avoid some sort of major theater war, even as Tehran is starting to move ships into the Straits of Hormuz this week. The timing aspect now revolves around the president's schedule, he said. I don't think we'll really see anything until after the State of the Union address is over on Tuesday, Holt said. He also flagged the tactical advantages of delayed action, saying night vision goggles will be optimal that following weekend, a factor he said could lower the risk to American personnel. Additionally, Holt said Trump is factoring market fallout into his plans for dealing with the Islamic Republic. We know that the president also does not like to do things when the markets are active, he said, predicting the oil markets will go bananas right before any major move. Even so, Holt stressed the U.S. can act immediately if ordered, saying the military is ready to go right now. He noted the USS Gerald R. Ford's movement in the region could reduce danger, adding, it would lower the risk of American forces if the Ford got closer before Trump launched strikes. The carrier is ahead of schedule, Holt said, noting it was sighted off the coast of Morocco early this morning, which means she's now past the Strait of Gibraltar and in the Mediterranean Sea. Give her about 12 hours, she'll be ready for combat operations, he said, describing how fast U.S. forces can shift to strike posture. Pressed on Iran's ability to respond, Holt said it's not a match for us, but cautioned that Tehran is dangerous and losses are possible. He warned that Iran's leaders could attempt a last-ditch escalation, describing a Hail Mary pass of 2,500 ballistic missiles aimed not just at Israel, but all the other capitals in the region to fracture alliances. Holt framed Trump's patience as strategic, not hesitant, describing the president as trying to educate something because he wants to save the Abraham Accords. But he added, Iran, unfortunately, has to be dealt with right now. This is the ninth inning for the Ayatollah and the mullahs, I believe, Holt said. The regime's internal collapse is accelerating the moment, he said. With a leader who has turned the guns on his own people amid a humanitarian crisis of exponential proportions. Huckabee says we must make Iran an issue in the State of the Union address. U.S. Ambassador to Israel Mike Huckabee told Newsmax Thursday of this week that President Donald Trump should use next week's State of the Union address to make clear that any potential military action against Iran is not simply a regional conflict, but a matter of direct American security. I think it is important that he's very clear that this is an American issue, Huckabee told Ed Henry, The Big Take. There are so many Americans who say, what does this have to do with us? this is an Israel issue or this is a Middle East issue, but it is not. As speculation grows that a possible U.S. military campaign against Iran could last weeks, not just a day or two, Huckabee said the president must prepare the public by explaining the broader threat posed by Tehran. Hamas, Hezbollah, and Houthis are all proxies of the Iranian government, Huckabee said. They have moved throughout the world. Hezbollah has significant presence throughout the Western Hemisphere. It is a direct threat to the United States. Tensions have escalated amid stalled negotiations over Iran's nuclear program. The Trump administration has sought to curb Tehran's uranium enrichment activities while also increasing the U.S. military presence in the Middle East in recent months, including additional naval and air assets as a deterrent against Iranian-backed forces operating in Gaza, Lebanon, Iraq, and Yemen. Huckabee argued that Iran's hostility toward the U.S. spans decades and should not be viewed solely through the lens of its conflict with Israel. This is an Iran that hired an assassin to try to kill President Trump, that has killed thousands of Americans over the course of the past 47 years, he said. And if they were able to obtain a long-range ballistic missile with nuclear capability, they would absolutely launch it in a heartbeat. Beyond immediate security concerns, Huckabee suggested regime change in Tehran could transform the region. The end of the Iranian regime would finally mean that there would be a complete realignment and a level of peace in the Middle East that we have not seen since the 70s, he said. President Trump is expected to outline his foreign policy priorities, including Iran, in Tuesday's nationally televised address. The Epstein estate agrees to a $35 million class action settlement. Jeffrey Epstein's estate has agreed to pay as much as $35 million to resolve a class action lawsuit that accused two of the disgraced financier's advisors of aiding and abetting his sex trafficking of young women and teenage girls, according to a court filing Thursday of this week. Boies Schiller Flexner, a law firm representing Epstein's victims, announced the settlement in a brief filed in federal court in Manhattan. The deal, if approved by a judge, would bring an end to a 2024 lawsuit filed against Epstein's former personal lawyer, Darren Indyke, and former accountant, Richard Kahn, who are co-executors of Epstein's estate. Epstein's estate previously set up a restitution fund that paid out $121 million to victims. The estate also paid out $49 million in additional settlements to victims. Neither Indyke nor Kahn made any admission or concession of misconduct as part of the settlement made public Thursday, their lawyer, Daniel H. Weiner, said in an email statement. Because they did nothing wrong, the co-executors were prepared to fight the claims against them through trial, but agreed to mediate and settle this lawsuit in order to achieve finality as to any potential claims against the Epstein estate, Weiner said. Weiner said the settlement would provide a confidential avenue for financial relief for Epstein victims who have not already resolved claims against the estate. Jeffrey Epstein died in a New York jail in August 2019. His death was ruled a suicide. In the 2024 lawsuit, lawyers at Boies Schiller Flexner said Indyke and Kahn helped Epstein create a complex web of corporations and bank accounts that let him hide his abuses and pay victims and recruiters while leaving them richly compensated for their work. The Boies law firm previously helped obtain $365 million of settlements with J.P. Morgan Chase. Oh, and Deutsche Bank after accusing them of missing red flags about Epstein, once a lucrative client, as reported by Thomson Reuters. Police search Mountbatten, Windsor's former home the day after his arrest. Police continued on Friday to search the former home of Andrew Mountbatten, Windsor, a day after he was arrested and held in custody for the best part of 11 hours on suspicion of misconduct in public office linked to his friendship with the late convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Following one of the most tumultuous days in the modern history of Britain's royal family, the former Prince Andrew is back at his new residence on the Sandringham estate, King Charles III's private retreat, which is around 150 miles north of London. Police have concluded their search at Wood Farm, where Mountbatten Windsor is living while waiting for his new home nearby, Marsh Farm, to be ready. They are still searching Royal Lodge, his 30-room former home in the Parkland near Windsor Castle, just west of the capital where the king's younger brother had lived for decades until his eviction earlier this month. Unmarked vans believed to be police vehicles have been entering the grounds throughout Friday morning. Mountbatten Windsor, who was pictured slouched in the back of his chauffeur-driven car following his release Thursday evening from a police station near Sandringham, remains under investigation, which means he has neither been charged nor exonerated by Thames Valley Police, the former responsible for areas west of London. His arrest follows years of allegations over his links with Epstein, who took his own life in a New York prison in 2019. The accusation at the heart of his arrest is that Mountbatten Windsor, who was known as Prince Andrew until October of 2025, when his brother the King stripped him of his titles and honors and banished him from Royal Lodge, shared confidential trade information with the disgraced financier when he was a trade envoy for the United Kingdom. Specifically, emails released last month by the U.S. Department of Justice appeared to show Mountbatten Windsor sharing reports of official visits to Hong Kong, Vietnam, and Singapore. One, dated November 2010, appeared to be forwarded by Mountbatten Windsor 5 minutes after he received it. Another, a few weeks later, appeared to show him sending Epstein a confidential brief on investment opportunities in the reconstruction of Helmand Province, Afghanistan. Thames Valley Police has previously said it was also reviewing allegations that a woman was trafficked to the UK by Epstein to have a sexual encounter with Mountbatten Windsor. Thursday's arrest had nothing to do with that. Other police forces are also conducting their own investigations into Epstein's links to the UK, including the assessment of flight logs at airports large and small. Mountbatten Windsor has consistently denied any wrongdoing in his association with Epstein, but has not commented on the most recent allegations that have emerged with the release of the so-called Epstein files. Police swept into the grounds of Mountbatten Windsor's home to arrest him at 8 a.m. Thursday this week, also his 66th birthday, before taking him to Alsham Police Station for questioning. It's not known what he told them. He may have said nothing or no comment, as is his right. Experts said the misconduct in a public office is notoriously difficult to prove. Firstly, it must be determined if Andrew Mountbatten Windsor was in a role within government that constitutes the title of public officer, said Sean Caulfield, a criminal defense lawyer at Hodges Jones & Allen. There is no standard definition to clearly draw on. The Crown Prosecution Service will ultimately make a decision about charging Mountbatten Windsor, who remains eighth in line to the throne. Andrew Gilmore, a partner at Grosvenor Law, said the prosecutors will apply the two-stage test known as the Code for Crown Prosecutions. That test is to determine whether there is a more realistic prospect of a conviction than not based on the evidence and whether the matter is in the public interest, he said. If these two tests are met, then the matter will be charged and proceed to court. Mountbatten Windsor was the first royal since King Charles, nearly four centuries ago, to be placed under arrest. That turned into a seismic moment in British history, leading to civil war, Charles' beheading, and the temporary abolition of the monarchy. His arrest is undoubtedly one of the gravest crises to affect the House of Windsor since its establishment more than 100 years ago. Arguably, only at the abdication of King Edward VIII in 1936 and the death of Diana, Princess of Wales, in 1997 has been as grave for the institution of the British monarchy in modern times. Though the king and the royal family will carry out their royal duties as normal, the questions surrounding Mountbatten Windsor will continue, not least because of the investigations are likely to take time. In a statement Thursday, the king said that the law must take its course, but that as this process continues, it would not be right for me to comment further on this matter. The allegations being investigated Thursday are separate from those made by Virginia Giuffre, who claimed she was trafficked to Britain to have sex with the prince in 2001 when she was just 17 years old. Giuffre died by suicide last year. Still, Giuffre's sister-in-law, Amanda Roberts, said that she was overjoyed when she got a phone call at 3 a.m. telling her the news of the arrest of Mountbatten Windsor. But those feelings of elation were quickly complicated by the realization that she could not share the feelings of vindication with her sister-in-law, Virginia Giuffre. "We cannot tell her how much we love her and that everything that she was doing is not in vain," Roberts added tearfully, as reported by the Associated Press. That's all the time we have today. We thank you for listening to Talking Information Center News. We encourage you to look for us, like us, and share us on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, and X. Please remember to get your tickets and join us at the annual Starry Night Gala. Volunteers, $100 a ticket, general public, $125. The date is set for Thursday, April 16th, 5 p.m. at the beautiful Barker House in Scituate, Massachusetts. Thank you for listening to Talking Information Center News. This is Michelle Balcony, Friday, February 20th, 2026.